Chemicals versus United States.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'd like to take a moment to request to set up a demonstrative, if allowed, that I've provided.
Did you provide us notice of this? I don't recall.
I did, yes, Your Honor. I submitted a letter through the ECM for it.
Is this, are these materials that were in the appendix?
They were in the appendix in a much more laid out form. They're in a more condensed form right now.
Well, has the other side seen it?
Yes, Your Honor, I have, and I've sent it over to the United States.
Is there any objection to their using it?
Did not.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'll warn you, typically we think demonstratives are a distraction rather than an assistance.
This is a good lesson for you law school students. Don't use demonstratives at appellate arguments. Maybe he'll convince us otherwise.
Proceed without it.
I mean, this is just a case about whether you missed a deadline or right.
That's to an end, Your Honor. That's correct.
What do we need a demonstrative to know a timeline?
Well, Your Honor,
not going to show us a product or something like that.
No, Your Honor. The purpose of the demonstrative was throughout the CIT's decision and throughout a lot of the briefings that were done. The timeline of events isn't 100% clear.
I mean, there was this thing you could request refunds of. Congress set a date certain that you had to do it by. You missed it by a number of months, and Customs said you're out.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. Our client did miss that time period.
Are there any
period.
Incorrect facts on that?
There are not, Your Honor.
So
however,
the issue is not that, but it's whether or not they could review it under 1581A, whatever the provision is, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the whole purpose behind the 1581A argument was the 19 U.S.C. 1514 permits for 180 days after a mistake of fact is found on liquidation, reliquidation, or a customs.
Well, let me ask you about that.
Sure.
The statutory language of 1514A references a clerical error, a mistake of fact, right, or other inadvertence. Do you argue that the statute does not require the mistake to be by customs? Is your view that the mistake could be by either the importer or customs?
It could be by either of the two. That's correct. I mean,
do you have any authority for that? Have been cases? Have we said that before?
Well, the statute itself actually says that it can be done by an importer. If we turn to the language of the statute, I believe it's been
okay. Did you cite it in your brief? I don't know.
It is cited in the brief. It is also cited in the appendix, and I'm turning to it right now, if you will. Give me one moment, please, Your Honor.
Nine.
Thank you, Your Honor. Was that the blue book at brief at 9? Thank you.
That's where your argument is, I think.
Your Honor, it does state that the court, Customs allows for reliquidations while still allowing corrections to be made after, in the time of the statute I was citing, it was 90 days. It is now 180 days. Made by the importer or by the customs service.
Where are we on page 9?
Pardon?
Page 9, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah.
You argue on 9 that because 1514A allows for protest to correct an error in the construction of law, even if that error was made by the importer, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
Sir.
So are you claiming that Industrial Chemicals misunderstood the statutory deadline?
Well, Your Honor, actually,
it's pretty clear, isn't it?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. The statutory deadline is clear. However, our mistake of fact argument actually revolves between the relationship between Industrial Chemicals and their customs broker. Unfortunately, however, I do not believe that that's a merits question, which is not presently before the court. Before the court is the question of jurisdiction, which...
Sure, A versus I.
Absolutely, yes, sir. And under A, A solely requires that there
If you had
be,
timely done it, you could have done it under A.
Yes, Your Honor, we could have done it under A. However, we believe...
If you can do it under A, you can't do it under I, can you?
No, sir. This court has said that if A is valuable, I mean, if A is available, then there is no point in pursuing under I. And we do believe, however, that there is still grounds to do it under A because of the way that the timing flowed in this proceeding. Because basically what ended up occurring is that GSP retroactive statute by Customs...
What could Customs have done? Is there any legal authority that says that Customs can exempt importers from a specific congressional GSP request deadline?
Sure, Your Honor. And that statutory provision is 1514, which calls for mistake of fact, which, as you point out, is a congressionally authorized exception that creates the basis for a protest. And in our case, once our client had realized that neither they nor the people that they believed were responsible for filing this and that mistake of fact had occurred, they actually had filed a protest right away, which Customs then in turn decided and made a decision to not review and just said that it was not properly filed.
Well, that was right? Are you talking about what was filed after the statutory deadline had expired?
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. It was filed late, and I understand that it was filed late. However, our client had then proposed forward a mistake of fact argument in its protest, which the Customs decision, which the Customs Service had decided not to review. Instead of
would it be a mistake of fact to say we thought we were right?
I'm not sure I understand, Your Honor.
Well, supposing you said we thought that we could file it any time we wanted to.
No, Your Honor, that would not be a correct interpretation of the law. In this case, it's more of
Is your mistake of fact that you thought somebody else was going to file this for you?
It could be, exactly.
How is that a mistake of fact?
Well, because the relationship between a customs importer and a customs broker is that the broker is supposed to do everything on behalf of the importer. And it's more of a quasi-agency relationship. And if that relationship exists... If that's true, it precludes us from the clerical error argument, but not...
But it's true, it also, if indeed they are in effect a fiduciary, then you have a cause of action against the broker, no?
Your Honor, I believe that that's an issue aside from the court at hand right now, whether or not our client has a claim against their broker. And that's also why I chose to use the term quasi-fiduciary, because it's not quite a fiduciary duty. I mean, as anybody who practices customs understands, I mean, unfortunately, the nature of a customs broker's relationship with their client
is
actually...
You're pointing the finger at your broker now, but suppose you had a hypothetical where you didn't have a broker, and you just blew the deadline, and your mistake of fact was, oh, well, we forgot to write down the deadline. Is that a legitimate mistake of fact?
I think that would be a stretch, Your Honor.
Well, aren't you bound by the actions of your broker to I mean, they did the same thing.
Right, and exactly, Your Honor. They did do exactly the same thing, and that's where believe that
there's... Well, if you can't raise it independently, then how can you raise it because your representative, who you're relying on, made the same mistake?
Well, as we actually pled in our complaint, the problem was that our representative believed they had made the mistake of fact, thinking that Industrial Chemicals was going to file it, while Industrial Chemicals believed that it was their broker that was going to file it, and this was not discovered until afterwards when Industrial Chemicals had made the statement that...
What mystifies me is how this is Customs' problem.
Well, it's Customs' problem to an end because Customs is supposed to review a discussion of mistake of fact. What I'm here today to state is when Industrial Chemicals filed that protest claiming that mistake of fact, the problem was that they just punted on it saying that they're not going to review it, and then the CIT punted on it by saying they don't have jurisdiction.
You say they filed a protest, but you can only protest decisions of Customs that fit certain categories, and Customs' view was our letter saying you're late is not a protestable decision. Isn't that correct?
That is what Customs
said. And you
blew
the deadline to file a protest to the actual is it a liquidation decision?
That is the position that made by Customs. However,
you agree with that, though. Like, you're out for filing a protest to the actual liquidation.
I'm sorry, could you repeat?
You're time barred from filing a protest to the actual liquidation decision that's the normal protestable
decision. Absolutely, Your Honor, yes. But the thing with the GSP statute, however, though, is GSP lapsed in 2013. GSP was renewed in late 2015. That gives a two-year window. Under that
period, statute that suggested Customs failure to make a refund under that was a protestable decision under A?
Well, what the statute actually said was that for the purpose of the statute, anything that had entered during that two-year period would be treated as if it had been entered forward. And so once it had made that decision, the decision actually to not offer a liquidation or a reliquidation based on the statute would then in that end be considered more of an exaction, which is once again a protestable decision by Customs. And that's where we're kind of seeing the issue being, is that at the end of the day, once they filed their protest, albeit on a late filed request, the problem was that the Customs Service did not make any review of whether or not the underlying claim was valid, and all they did was they just punted it, and then the CIT said, we don't have jurisdiction to review it.
Well, wait a minute. Before all my time to ask you a question goes away, I'm clear that you've given up on the I arguments, right?
Actually, Your Honor, I mean, I believe that I does exist in the alternative.
Wait. I asked you about A, and you said no, A, not I.
Okay, let me take a step back then, Your Honor. I believe that A is the primary form of jurisdiction in this case because we did file a timely protest. However,
you
in
failed
the
to raise I before the CIT.
Pardon?
Is that correct?
Pardon?
18 of the red brief, the government says you failed to raise the issue of 1581I before the CIT.
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And the reason behind that was at the time I was not the attorney of record on that case. However, at the time—
Wait, I'm sorry. I meant your client failed to raise it before the CIT.
Sure, Your Honor. What ended up occurring in that situation, however, is we had so firmly believed that A was the proper venue that they had not—
So you can't raise I now on appeal. I mean, your client has to be bound by its choices, not of its representatives.
Sure. Your Honor,
The fact that it gets a different representative doesn't make it get to come forward with a different argument.
Well, so—
Or the fact that its representative screwed up and didn't file a refund request when they should have doesn't excuse them somehow as a mistake.
I do agree, Your Honor, with the fact that the rules of the CIT do preclude you from raising I if you did not do it based on Rule 3 that says that if you file your summons and complaint at the same time if you're filing under I. However, this court, granted, has not, that I have found, been able to at any point in time say otherwise that this court can raise it sua sponte. However, jurisdictional issues can always be raised by a court at any time. And there's plenty of Supreme Court precedent that says that. And
that usually when there's a jurisdictional problem, not when you're coming up with an alternative theory of jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor. However, I do believe that would
where
be...
Where somebody said no jurisdiction and the appellate court comes up and said, well, maybe there's this alternative theory. You should go check at it that you never raised.
Well, so in the Golden Bridge case, actually, it wasn't 100% similar, but in the Golden Bridge case, they did say that there is a ability to deviate from the rule of the standard rule and have a court raise an issue sua sponte on this.
That was a claim construction question, right?
That's correct, a claim construction case. Yeah. That's correct, Your Honor. And in the Forshee case, the Supreme Court said that with few notable exceptions such as jurisdiction issues, then those sorts of issues are generally not raised sua sponte by a court. However, they do, you know, posit that it is theoretically possible that you could raise those issues upon appeal.
You say on page 12 of this admirably slim brief that... keeping in mind we have to read everything two or three times, because industrial chemicals still has a right to protest CPB's denial, mm-hmm. and CPB completely disregarded this right, this court has a basis for jurisdiction under I-4 as it relates to 1581A.
Yes, sir.
Can you cite any legal authority to support that statement?
I can't find any at the time, Your Honor. I'm not aware of any.
Me neither.
That was a construction of the statutory provisions that we found with regards to the administration of the review of the protest. So, if
If Your Honors have no further question, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Gaia, and I'm here with Customs Counsel Yelena Slipak. Your Honors, the Customs notification of March 11th, 2016 was a non-protestable event. Customs had no discretion to act here.
Congress was being pretty generous.
Congress was, as Your Honor notes, was passing a retroactive GSP benefit with a clear deadline.
So, but what if hypothetically they'd filed within the deadline and said we're entitled to a refund and Customs factually gets it wrong and says, oh, well, you didn't actually pay this and denies the refund request? Is that a protestable decision?
I think that would be a different.
That's an A, right?
That would likely be a 1581A.
That's because it's an actual Customs decision on whether or not they're due a refund, not you're out because you're late.
That would be, I think, the way that we would think about that is that that would be the Customs would have had discretion in that case and would have been under a mistaken belief that it couldn't act, but it actually had authority to act. And in that case, there would be the protest mechanism to correct that mistaken belief, and if not, there would be review in the court. In this case, Customs had no authority to act, and therefore there was no protestable event, and therefore there was no jurisdiction at the CIT. And unless Your Honors have any further questions, the government will rest on its brief.
Thank you.
Thank you. You going for the record?
That's not the record. I've seen the record before.
Your Honors, I would just like to just point out really quickly that in this instance, we are here on the jurisdictional question, not on the merits question of whether or not mistake of fact existed. We're here just to decide whether or not a valid protest had been filed, which had been denied by Customs, and thus gives rise to jurisdiction under A. If Your Honors have any questions about that, I would like to answer any questions that you have as to whether or not that was a valid protest. Else, I would also rest on my briefs with regards to the points made therein.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We thank both sides. The case is submitted. That concludes our proceedings for this afternoon.
The honorable court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.